Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio, creating waves of awareness over the airwaves, via the internet, and by friends telling friends they care. Working in unity to promote homeopathy around the globe. Join us on Monday evening, U.S. Eastern Time, as we explore homeopathy and facial analysis, a show co-hosted by HWC founder and homeopath Debbie Brooks and Grant Bentley, homeopath and naturopath. We invite you to comment and call in to contribute your questions. Let's go!
Hi, I'm Debbie Brooks, founder of Homeopathy World Community, speaking with our co-host tonight, Grant Bentley, Australian homeopath and specialist in the facial analysis method. Today is November 14th, 2011. We're going to start off with a quote from Mother Teresa of Calcutta, who says, "Spread love everywhere you go. First of all, in your own house. Let no one ever come to you without leaving better and happier. Be the living expression of God's kindness. Kindness in your face, kindness in your eyes, kindness in your smile, kindness." I think that was her watchword. And we're going to be talking today about facial analysis. Whether you're new to homeopathy or continuing your lifelong study, you're going to find this information very innovative and in addition to your healing toolbox. Do help us out for the show by tweeting, letting other people know, your friends, family, and associates. Send them an email, a message on Facebook, share it with others. You have an opportunity to put the widget of each show onto your website or your blog. Come on to the live chat with us. You could even call in. It's going to be a 30-minute show this evening, and so we're going to see if we can keep it to that amount of time. Grant is with us. I think I hear him in the background.
Yes, I'm here. How are you, Debbie?
Doing great, Grant. I thought I would start off by telling a little personal story, because we have been talking the last number of weeks about the energy, how the energy interacts in the universe, whether it encloses itself or it pushes out, or it's in centrifugal force or whatever. And so this is what happened to me about 2 weeks ago. I was in the garden and I had a thorn that went straight into my palm. And of course, you know, those are not too pleasant to have, but I thought that the entire thorn came out, except for the fact that every time I moved my hand, I had a sharp sticking pain in there. And so even though I could not see anything, and I picked and picked at it until I thought I had cut everything out, but for some reason, the skin remained inflamed and red, and it became even hard, like a callus, and it still was quite sore, even though you could not see anything. And I tried to soak it in hot water and everything to see if I could get it to come out. And eventually, I did take a number of remedies. I won't mention what those are right now. But 2 weeks, so yesterday, my skin started to peel, and I pulled it off, and I think something's wrong here. So I squeezed my skin, and a whole bunch of pus came out. And then I saw this great big black thing that somehow must have worked its way up to the surface. And finally, I poked around a lot more. The whole thing came out finally, and it automatically started to feel a lot better. And I didn't have any more pain. So I was wondering how you would explain this in relationship to the HFA method.
Well, look, with all things, I suppose, you're getting to know me a little by now. What I can do is pretty much take any particular topic like a thorn, and we can talk for hours on the homeopathic representation of what is happening. So essentially what I could do is that I could spend the next 30 minutes just talking about that thorn, and you wouldn't think so at first, but in fact it's a very, very interesting story in the sense that it poses two major dynamics that are occurring in homeopathy. What we've got here is the healing power of nature, and also, secondly, we've got a discussion on acute versus chronic, because what you are talking about here is that there is an acute reaction. Now, the first thing that I want to point out is it's taking remedies and then you squeeze that thorn out and so forth. But the point I also want to, or a question that I want to pose to you, is that what happens if you don't have any remedies and it's too deep to squeeze? Now, let's just put that aside just for the moment, because what I want to talk about here is that I want to talk about, firstly, the acute versus chronic. In HFA, what we're talking about is that the body will go into a mechanism where we are responding in a reasonably unique way, not an entirely unique way. Now, I'm getting up on my screen that people are having trouble with the quality here, but there's not a great deal that I can really do about that apart from call in again. So what I'll do is that I'll just disconnect just for a minute and reconnect and come back in.
Hello, can you hear me now? Can anybody hear me? Testing, 1, 2, 3. Can anybody hear me? Someone chime in on the, please write in on the chat if you can hear me at all. Testing.
Hello.
Okay, so I can't hear Debbie at all, but am I right in understanding Hello? That you guys can hear me?
Can you hear me? No?
Yes, I can hear you now.
Okay, great. Okay, we're good.
All right. So let's hope that, and hopefully everybody can hear me a little bit. So, okay, what I was talking about, Debbie, was that there are two things that come from your story. The first thing is that one is the healing power of nature. The second one is acute versus chronic. Now, in acute versus chronic, what we're seeing here is that the body goes through a process, like the inflammatory process is very similar, regardless of what miasm or colour group a person belongs to, when it comes to acute disease. This is why Hardiman can do things like the
genus epidemicus, that is, understand the nature of the illness before, like in the case of typhoid or cholera, even before it becomes an epidemic, he can work from getting a collection of the people who have suffered from that oncoming epidemic, and he can work out the signs and symptoms and a genus epidemicus remedy before it even gets here and apply it. Now, that can be done with acute disease because the ramifications of acute disease are very similar, and the way that our body reacts in acute is very, very similar. For example, if we jam our finger in the car door, for example, then we know that it doesn't matter what colour group or miasm that you belong to, we know that you are going to end up with a bruise. And it's the same with what you were talking about with the splinter. A lodged splinter in your skin is eventually going to fester. The body is going to try and push it out. It may or may not be able to do that, but it's going to try its best to do it, and so that inflammatory response will be universal all the way through. Now, what Hahnemann began understanding, however, is that there is something different when it's a chronic disease, because if he was trying to just do the sum total, if he was just trying to do the sum total of arthritis, for example, or the sum total of depression by just doing a genus epidemicus remedy for depression, then he was not being able to come up with any real clear-cut answers. So he began to understand that there was another way of applying homeopathy that needed to be put into action. Now, I see here that you're saying that I'm very, but I'm another person is Kate is saying that it sounds okay. So, look, I'll continue in the hope that it's not too bad. So, there are two aspects. That's the first aspect that I want to talk about. So, we need to understand that chronic response is a response to ongoing stress, not an acute situation. And I said that there were two things. Now, I won't go on with them too much, but I just want to touch on them. The first thing is the healing power of nature that you're bringing up and how we react in ways. Now, I am agreeing with you that it's pre-programmed and it's marvelous and it's to watch these things. And yet at the same time, we always need to bear in mind that the healing power is very, very limited. And this is what Hahnemann is trying to get across when he talks about, in his introduction, not only expedition of the Organon, but also to the fifth, fourth, third, second, and first. This is one of the major principles that Hahnemann is trying to help homeopath practitioners understand. That is, in a nutshell, that the healing power of nature, while it exists, is very, very limited. And in fact, this is where he believed that a lot of medicine at his time was going wrong. And now it seems in modern times, sounds very odd what I'm about to say, but nonetheless, if you reread the introduction or read it, depending on whether you've read it or not beforehand, you will come to the same conclusion. Hahnemann makes no mistake in trying to point out that following nature's lead in everything that nature is doing is not a wise prospect. This is why we need medicines. Because in the end, remember, right at the beginning of our talk here, you were explaining to me about the thorn that had gone into your hand. And you said that it was pretty deep enough to fester, but not so deep that you couldn't get it out. Now we spoke about, okay, but what you did is that you were able to squeeze that out and you were able to use medicines. But what happens if it's so deep that you can't squeeze it out, or you don't have access to medicines. The fact is that people in the past could have died of septicemia or gangrene because that infection has become systemic. What we gain from that, this is the whole purpose that surgery was invented, the whole reason that different medicaments, including homeopathy, were invented, because things go wrong, and they will go wrong with the slightest problem. And the reason that it will turn septic and it can turn systematic is simply, or systemic, I should have said, is just simply because the healing power of nature is limited. And Hahnemann, one of his major criticisms is that that the physicians of his time were trying to emulate nature in their purgatives, because what Hahnemann, of course, rails against in the Organon is that he rails against bloodletting. He raves against people that are, you know, physicians that are causing not only the bloodletting but excessive diarrhea, salivation, sweating, and so on. Because what we see, and this is still in the naturopathic idea of health and illness, and still seen in the homeopathic in a lot of circles, is that if we follow nature's lead and nature brings things to a crisis, then if we emulate that in our medicines, everything should be okay. But the simple truth is that that is not what Hahnemann is saying. And he says in the introduction of all six editions of the Organon that if that's what you're trying to do, then you're going to go wrong. And so we kind of have, even today, where we're saying we talk about things like the healing crisis, we talk about homeopathic aggravations, which is a different story, but bringing people to this fever pitch is a good thing to do. But I would suggest to any homeopath that is saying that this is a good thing to do, to reread Hahnemann's explanation on what he thinks of this healing crisis, because you're going to find that Hahnemann is in complete disagreement with you, not only in the first edition, but right up to the sixth. That is one of the very few things, along with the semilimum and the infinitesimal dose and the totality of symptoms, that he never, in all six editions, never would change his mind. Now, when we're talking about making a fever, for example, yes, what he's saying here is that nature reaches a crisis point. And the way that human beings have viewed it is that when people reach a crisis point, the body makes an all-out attempt to try and balance itself a little bit. But it's reached that point where you're either going to recover or you're going to be 6 foot under the ground. But what Hahnemann is saying is that there are a lot of steps in between them. We're not to replicate the crisis point. That's the wrong thing to do. Anyway, I better be quiet and let you in.
No, go. I am actually going to let you go ahead and talk while I do an experiment back here. I was, as I'm looking at my hand and my palm during these 2 weeks, I'm thinking that there is something deep in there. And just as you said, I thought, well, what if somebody did have like a bullet or something in them? And what would the body do to handle that situation if it was in so deep? And that thorn must have been in pretty deep for me, not to be able to feel it or see it or anything, and then have to push really, really hard for it to come to the surface at all. So so you go ahead and talk.
Okay, so what we see, if we go back into the old Saturday afternoons on a rainy day, we've got the old cowboy movie, or we've got the old World War II movies on, where somebody is shot, they're dying, they're in a terrible state, but then the surgeon or the doctor or even just the medic on the scene, whoever it may be, turns to the other person and says, it doesn't matter, it's got to come out. Now, you know, it doesn't matter how weak they are, they're right, it has to come out. And the reason for that is that we know that that wound will become septic, and it will turn gangrenous, and that person will die. That is beyond a given. And that's why, no matter how weak the person may be, that bullet or whatever it is has to be removed. Because the body will just keep on going, but it's not smart in the sense that it... Look, our initial response to disease, or our initial response, our primary response, is sophisticated only to a point. If you read aphorism 9, now this is one that I know exists. I think I said aphorism 6 at some stage regarding something. I looked it up later, it was wrong. So, but this one I know is right. Now, in aphorism 9, what Hahnemann is doing is making the difference between our inward reason-gifted mind and our unintelligent instinct. Now, this is why in Soul and Survival I start referring it now to an instinct, because it's the best descriptor, really, for what it is that our vital force is doing. It is instinctively going on a program. So what we see, and I've got to recollect my thoughts because I'm trying to read the captions at the same time, and now I've forgotten what I was going to say. So what we have is that in aphorism 9, he talks about how there is a difference between our consciousness and also between what we as homeopaths call our vital force, or what anybody else would call it, either our...
Is anybody there?
I can just hear you.
Okay. I'm
going
to...
There's a whole lot of crap.
Okay. Anybody there? I don't know what I am. Hello there. Welcome, guests. I hope that you can hear me. I do not hear myself talking. Okay, we're trying it again. How are you doing there? Anybody hear me?
Okay, I can hear you a little bit better now.
Okay. Okay.
Can you hear me?
My sound quality is really poor, but I can hear you. So go ahead. You were talking about how the body finds a way to heal and it needs assistance, because if there is something lodged in there and it is unable to expel it on its own, then that's where probably homeopathy is going to come in.
Well, it's the whole reason that we need medicine in the first place. I mean, the simple fact of the matter is if you take, say, something like a strep throat. Now, a strep throat can lead to kidney failure. That's why it's really important to get on top of it. So what happens here is that the virus itself can get lodged in the kidneys in between the mesh. It is so small it can lodge there. So what our white cells do is that our white cells go to that area because they know that virus is hiding in there. And what they do is just release all these powerful enzymes to get at this particular virus. And it will, because it's lodged in between the mesh of the kidneys, kidneys, because it's so small, the white cells will just keep pumping these enzymes in until they virtually destroy the kidney to get at it. Now, what we would say, looking at that, is that we say, well, where's the reasoning in this? Where is the thinking? What you're doing is killing the patient to get at the virus. And that is exactly what Hahnemann is trying to say. He's trying to say that no matter how sophisticated and how cool nature seems to be in her initial response, never bearing, always keep sight of the fact that what nature will do is that it has only a pre-prescribed set of programs. It is a machine in that sense. And so what it will do is that, just like what we're talking about there, where the strep infection is lodged between the mesh of the kidneys, what we see is that the white cells will just follow the same procedure, but just do it more. And that's what you see also with your, that's what you see with anything that is lodged, but like your thorn in your body, that the white cells will come to this area, they will perform their task, and they will keep doing their task until they have dissolved the thorn. But if that thorn doesn't dissolve, then just more white cells come in, and they just keep doing the same thing. I mean, this is what asbestosis is too. Asbestosis, you breathe in this stuff, the asbestos, into your lungs, it gets lodged into your lungs, and then all these white cells come in and try and destroy it with their enzymes, which are destroying everything organic, including all of the lung tissue that surrounds the asbestos. But the asbestos itself is a product that does not break down under these white cell enzymes. So what does the body turn around and say to itself? Well, listen, we've got to come up with another strategy here, because this ain't working. No, it doesn't do that. What it does is that it does what it always does. It does program to do. If that doesn't work, do the same thing, but more of it. And if that doesn't work, do the same thing, but more of it. Now, it's not only due to foreign material. It does this with everything. This is why Hahnemann says that the vital force is unintelligent instinct that just repeats itself. This is also why he turns around and he says, you cannot always mimic nature. You've got to know when to stop. Because as all these white cells are going into either the Bowman's capsule of the kidney, or they're going into the lung to get those fibres of asbestos, those fibres of asbestos will still be in that lung even after the white cells have destroyed all of the lung tissue. And so in that end, we're going to turn around and say, well, that's nature, that's smart, intelligent nature doing its job. No, this is what makes it the dangerous reaction, because we can't turn that natural program off. So what homeopathy, the principle of homeopathy, is about is understanding what aspects of nature are important to double up on and what aspects of nature are important to know to leave them aside. Not everything in nature is what we want to double up on. I can remember reading, and it's a very, like, a really famous homeopath who writes in one of his books about calcarb, and he talks about how calcarb is, because calcarb disorders the stomach, then what happens is that the calcarb person goes around wanting to, you know, having these cravings for chalk or for dirt or for plaster. So it has these disordered cravings. Now, this particular homeopath wrote in their book that here is nature at work. Here is the majesty of nature at work, because there must be something in that chalk, something in that plaster or in that dirt that the body is craving. This is going on with the nature knows all principle. But nature does not know all with asbestosis. And nature does not know all when that strep infection is in the kidneys. And this is what Hahnemann is trying to get across. He hasn't got an adversity to nature, but he understands that it has limits. That calcarb person is not sending out eat chalk, eat plaster, eat dirt because there is something really beneficial in it. It's sending out those messages because the disordered stomach is disordered. So as a result of that, the messages that are being received by the brain are wrong. And that's what we have to fix. We have to fix up these wrong messages. It is not a principle of just follow nature. So this is where we've got to know when nature is working and when nature is not working. And it's a really important subject. So thanks for bringing it up.
Okay. Well, due to the difficulties that we had, technical difficulties and everything, we have covered 30 minutes. So it's up to you if you would like to continue to speak today, this evening, for me, or you would like to say this is the end of the show and we'll pick it up again the next time. It's up to you.
Well, look, some people have been kind enough to donate, you know, well, not donate, but they've been interested enough to come on board and to want to listen. So I feel that we owe it to them to keep on going for a little bit because most of it's been taken up with problems.
Well, you had in mind to talk about the purpose of the practitioner, and as you sent me that little message, I was thinking, all the world is a stage, and who are the actors and actresses, and what part do we play? And so we're putting a scenario of characters together of what is the purpose of the practitioner and what is the relationship with the patient.
Well, all the world is a stage is a good way to start this, because isn't this pretty much what Kent was saying, is that the whole world is virtually an outpatient's clinic, and what you can do is you can see the different characters represented in the remedies going past. This is where we get the idea of, you know, there goes Miss Pulsatilla and there goes Mr. Arsenicum and so on. And as a result of that, that has led to this post-Kentian idea of homeopathy where everybody's character is mirrored anthropomorphically into a particular remedy. Now, look, as a few of your listeners are probably beginning to figure out now, I rarely say anything that is in unison with current understanding. I generally have this idea. The homeopathy that I've come to understand, the homeopathy that I use, and I'm going to add in a little bit of a plug, the homeopathy that is boundlessly more effective than the homeopathy that I used to use in the past, is completely different to the way that we understand homeopathy now. Now, when we even talk about the purpose of the practitioner, what's interesting about that question is that I think it's a really vital question. A person recently sent an email talking about how they are wanting to go into the study of Materia Medica because they want to understand their patients more deeply. They want to understand their patients as deeply and as efficiently and as thoroughly as they possibly can. Now, I get that. But for what purpose? This is the real question. For what purpose? In the end,
I would think to recognize when they walked in the door that, oh, I've read all of this and it sounds exactly like what I just read.
Ah, you're absolutely right. And that's what most people think too. And I'm going to sit here and I'm going to say, well, you know what? I think you're wrong. Because the simple thing is, And that's, of course, nothing personal. But no, I think it's wrong too. I had spent the first half of my close on 20 years of homeopathy trying to recognize the little idiosyncrasies, the handshake, the this, the that. I was weaned and brought up on Coulter and Kent and everybody else as well. So I understand where people are, because that's exactly where I was. But at the same time, what I'm telling you is, in my opinion, is simply this. The job of the practitioner, this is my personal thing, obviously. The job of the homeopathic practitioner is to find a remedy. My job is not to write that patient's autobiography or their biography, and it's not necessarily to become their friend. My own purpose is to come up with the best remedy that is going to fix their complaint. The next question becomes, is understanding them to their absolute core, is that going to help me select the right remedy? That's the real question. And my answer to this, after 10 years' experience with HFA versus 10 years' experience with Essence, is no, it absolutely will not. And the reason for this is because understanding, since when did character become a pathology? We talk about the mentals and we talk about different emotions, but when we look at Hardiman's writings, and this is where I guess I'm becoming... I've stepped away from Hardiman because I see things, particularly the miasms, as not so much an infection, but our response to stress and infection, not the stress or infection itself. So in that respect, I've moved away a little from Hardiman, but in 90% of what I've done, I'm actually back in the Hardimanian fold. And that Hardimanian fold means that Hardiman is talking about what needs to be fixed mentally and emotionally are the aberrant behaviors and thoughts, not the plain character. The plain character, the things that make that person unique are always going to be unique to that character, but they're not going to be modified by a remedy. For example, if you take a really great guitarist, if you give them the right remedy, their guitar skills are never altered. And we don't want them altered, and they'd never turn up. They'd sue us if we did alter it negatively. And so the simple fact of the matter is that those idiosyncrasies, those things that make a person, those special loves, those special talents, those that we have had from us from birth, they are not influenced by it. What is influenced by the remedy, however, is the changes to our character, meaning that I was a happy person, I loved playing the guitar or I loved the music, but since the death of my partner, I can't seem to find any joy anywhere. I don't want to pick up any music. I don't even want to listen to any music. I have lost all vibrance for life. Now, that loss of the vibrance for life is what we need to represent. The question now becomes, is do I have to understand the entire makeup of my patient to understand the rubrics of the joylessness of life and the ailments since the death of a loved one? And the answer is no, I don't need to do that. Since the death of this loved person in our fictitious life, they have changed from being who they are into someone that they don't want to be. Their emotions have gone from being just generalized, the person that they are used to and getting on with their life, into somebody who can't go back into the life that is natural for them. And it is those aberrants that we need to rapportize on. And that's why I highlight, and I know people are writing in with capitals and all sorts of things about the nature of the human being, but I am going to say this one more time. Yes, everybody is an individual, and yes, everybody has their own nature and has their own character, but that is not what we are repertorizing on. What we are repertorizing on are, one, the stresses that have moved us away from natural character, and two, what that movement away from natural character, what they are. So if a person was normally happy, loves music, loves, you know, going out for walks, now they're housebound and sad and they can't listen to any music at all, what I repertorize on is, one, the strip that threw them into that position, and two, the changes from character. Now, I'm not alone in just saying that that is what we repertorize on, because that's what Hahnemann said. This is not my idea, but I am backing up what Hahnemann is saying. Hahnemann just talks about the changes in character. He doesn't necessarily talk about understanding the whole world as a hospital ward. That was Kent. But what you need to understand, or what homeopaths need to understand, is that for always following Kent and post-Kentian philosophy, I'm not saying that it's not effective. What I am saying is it's not necessarily Hahnemannian. Now, what we have to do as a profession is we have to work out which one is the most effective for our clinic. Now, this is one of the real problems. We need to, rather than just sort of say the theorist version that this is what's going on, it really needs to be put into practice. Now, that is exactly what I have done. For 20 years, I've been practicing this. And when I'm talking about this, I'm not talking about, and I don't mean to have shots at anybody, but I'm not talking about a teacher that is not really doing all that much practice at the moment, because that's a very common story. I'm talking about I have been a practitioner that has done some teaching, not a teacher that has done some practice. Now, when I was doing the Kentian, or this Kentian, post-Kentian, get to understand every aspect and nature of the person, because that's where the remedy is, my results were nowhere near as good as just going back to the fundamentals of Hahnemann and saying, here is our person, but here is the deviation of that person, and that deviation of normalcy is what needs to be repertorized on. So what I do in the clinic now is that I say, rather than tell me who you are at the very core kernel of your existence, tell me all your loves, tell me all your hates, tell me all your everything else, so I can understand you and make an anthropomorphic selection to a remedy. What I ask is what's wrong? What brings you here? And if the person turns around and says, you know, since the death of my wife, I've just lost all joy for life, then I have the two primary fundamental rubrics in only 5 minutes, joylessness and the death. And that's what I'm saying. That's what we kind of believe that we have lost sight of slightly by trying to make a perfect shadow in our remedies to match up to the person in front of us, when in fact that was not the original intention.
Okay. It depends on how much time you want to keep going and talking about this in particular. So are you saying that you can actually find a remedy for someone if they walk into your office, sit down, and you look at them, and they really do look the part of what you're saying, that they look joyless, their countenance looks poor, and some other, maybe they say that they're up at night and they have to have juice to drink. It's the only thing that makes them feel better, and something about their urine, and then also they have had this great loss and they don't have any joy and they're feeling depressed. So do you right away you have a remedy for them?
Well, what I do is that I repertise on it. The first thing, look, another thing that I want to point out is that when I was first going through homeopathy, and like I said, this is around about 20 years ago, so maybe things have changed a little bit then, but one of the things that marked a master of homeopathy as I was going through the different people that were visiting and the lecturers and something, one of the things that became really obvious were those that needed to repertise and those that just knew their remedies so well that they didn't repertise. And that was always right. Well, like I said, in the 80s at least, that was always the signpost of the master, the person that didn't need to repertise. What I will point out now is that, again, I'm doing this for 20 years, I repertise every single case. So when someone comes in with the conditions that you were just saying, would I be able to know the remedy? The answer is absolutely not. What I will be able to do, though, is that based on those signs and symptoms that you've given me, I will be able to know one fairly soon after I repertise it and do their facial analysis. Now, the facial analysis is what really knocks down the degree of how many remedies I need to choose from. Because if we've got a death, and we've got joylessness, and we've got sleeplessness, and we've got a craving for sugar, and we've got a better for continued motion, if I put all of those rubrics in, I will still end up with maybe 20 or 30 different remedies that will suit this person. But what happens now is that I put the overlay of the facial analysis on, and even if there's 30, generally these 30 remedies are equally distributed along the miasms or throughout the miasms. So I put this facial analysis overlay, and all of a sudden, instead of 30, I might have 4 or 5 that I need to choose from. And that narrows down my choice considerably, and that's how I can get quite good results very, very quickly. And look, I'm not here sort of saying that everyone is wrong. I'm not trying to do anything like this. All I'm saying is what works for me as a practitioner. Not what's in the books. I know what's in the books. I'm not saying what Kit really meant or what Hahnemann really meant. I'm not here as kind of a homeopathic pastor talking out these revelations and what's in the good books. I'm saying to you what works at a clinical level. That's it. Not the teacher part-time clinician, but the clinician part-time teacher. And what I'm saying to you is that the more that I tried to find that inner essence and anthropomorphically match it to a remedy, the less success I got from it. Now, someone could now write in and say, well, maybe that's just because you were rubbish at it, and that's the real reason. Well, perhaps that's right. Perhaps it's just that I was no good at it. But if that's the case, what I can then put forward is that I could come up with a method that for people who are also out there that are crap at doing the anthropomorphic projection, I've got a method that will help you narrow that down very much. The facial analysis means, what the whole thing means for me, here's how I take a case. So let's make it really practical, okay? What the facial analysis case is, someone comes into my clinic. I don't need to necessarily know who are you. I want to know what's wrong with you. What brings you here? So they'll tell me their problem. The problem is, and we'll stick to the same scenario. So there's a few things that I'm looking for here. I'm looking for the cause, the prior cause. That cause must go into my repertorization if I can find it, right? So the death, for example, will be a cause. The joylessness, the sleeplessness, the craving for sweets, the get sick every time you eat sour foods, and the desire for constant motion are now new reactions to that cause. That is my case. So that case will take me an hour or so to figure out. I still don't know. I couldn't sit down and write this person's biography. But remember, this goes back to the first question. What is the purpose of the practitioner? Well, to me, the purpose of the practitioner is to find the remedy for the patient in front of me that is going to help restore them back into balance so they can go and live the life that they want to live. That is my whole and only purpose. So I then do a repertorization. That repertorization is always based on the obvious. Okay, so the death is obvious. I was happy before the death. I am sad after the death. So I never go into the psychoanalysis. A lot of what is happening at the moment, particularly with sensation, is just Freud revisited. I know Freud well, and I'm not saying Freud doesn't work. But what I'm saying is that Freud is difficult. It is very difficult. And homeopathy, particularly HFA, doesn't need psychoanalysis. You don't need to be a psychiatrist to understand that the person was happy before their partner died and now they are joyless afterwards. I don't have to say, well, what did it mean for you? They're telling me I lost my celebration of life when my partner died. So I only just take it at face value. So the death goes into the repetition. As a result of that, I can begin to understand some of what's going on with the generals. I can understand how the body is trying to readjust itself. It's not sleeping because it's drained of energy and it's sad. It's craving sugar because it needs an external energy source. So I can get this. So the sum total of the obvious is what I take because that's the case. Then what I do is that I do their facial analysis. That tells me what group they belong to and will eliminate 6/7 of the remedies that are in my repertorization. Then I just simply give the one that seems the best for them. That's it. That's the process.
Okay. So it sounds very clear. I think the emphasis that I'm hearing is that there's no serious theory. You're not interpreting anything. You're just gathering actual facts that nobody can refute. Whether somebody says, this happened in my life, there was a death, or there was an accident, or I had such and such a disease and it affected such and such organ, something like that, or this is the part of my body that hurts me and the quality, the location of the pain. So these are actual facts that you can substantiate. And then from there, once you've gathered the main things that are the main complaints and what's affecting the individual, then you are going to do the measurements for the facial analysis, which narrows down the field. I want to let you know how much time we have left, about 5 minutes left for you to answer that. And I want to let folks know, if you ever want to call into this line and ask questions, you need to inform us ahead of time so that we know who's calling in. There's a question. It's Kate, who's a homeopath in the live chat, is asking about a book. And so at the last minute or so, we were going to give you your website so people can find all the books and all of the resource information from you, okay?
Sure, and also too, I'm sure that Louise will be busy answering Kate and the book as we speak. So, look, I just would like to, you know, I again, I'm used to being on the outer. I'm kind of used to becoming a homeopathic outcast and speaking what others are not speaking. But I've become very skeptical of the homeopathic expert that talks about the depth of remedies and the this and the, and they, you know, they write 200-page books on single remedies and so on. I don't see homeopathy that way. I think that if you're, if you know, there's a difference between physics and theology. And theology, you can argue to the end of time and everyone's got an opinion. Now, homeopathy always likes to liken itself to the rules of physics, that it's an actual event that is taking place. But one of the basics of Newtonian physics is just simply to every cause there is an equal, every action there's an equal and opposite reaction. And that's the basis of the HFA approach to homeopathy. There is something, a stressor, that is causing the reaction to that stressor. The stressor is negative, the reaction is negative. It will be an equal and opposite reaction to the stress. It's just that we happen to call it pathology. By going off on the tangent of understanding who that person is at their kernel means the focus of the ball is no longer on the pathology or the event that caused it. But that is actually the primary focus. Our job is to be a clinician, not to be perpetual students of homeopathic theory, but to put it into effect and to see those clinical results. We have got to make people feel better. We have got to rejuvenate them. We've got to lower their pain that they're experiencing, because if we're not, we're just waffling and wasting everybody's time. That's my opinion.
Okay. So do you want to just tell what kind of information people will be able to find on your website? So this will be also in the recording for the people who want to listen again to what you've just said in the archive. And a lot of people do that. They come live, they listen, and then they want to listen again and again to see if they've missed anything. So just tell them the website address and what they're going to find there.
Okay, the website address is all the W's. And it's VCCH, Victor Charlie Charlie Harry, VCCH.org. And that has vast amounts of information. It's all there. It's all free for you to have a look at. You will, I mean, one of the things that people say when they go to the site is that they are amazed at how much work has really gone into this. This is not just a slight bit of overnight theory, and here's a supposition. This is 10 years of serious research that has gone into this, and the effects at a clinical level bear that sort of procedure out. They bear that meticulous research out. The research is really meticulous, but once you get the hang of this, it just takes a little bit of a couple of mental shifts to move away from the person. Not that the person is irrelevant. We still go down that. I still try and get a patient's biography, but for different reasons. But I don't try and do any of the sensation psychoanalysis. I don't think that, for me, like I said, it works, but it's very long-winded. And in the end, often it doesn't give you a rubric, because in the end, that's what everything is about, getting the rubrics, doing the repertorization, and getting the right remedy. And so if it doesn't give you that rubric, then, you know, you've got to really question its validity. Always bear in mind the purpose of the practitioner is to help the patient. That's it. So here is a very practical way that you can do this. So go, it's www.vcchvictorcharliecharlieharry.org, O-R-G. Have a look there if you're interested in learning some more. There are lots of tools available and books and all sorts of courses and the whole gamut. We are trying to be as open and as transparent as possible and as helpful as possible for anyone who has their patient's best interests at heart.
Okay, I want to thank everybody. I want to thank you, Grant, for being here. And we're going to end the show tonight. We're going to be on vacation for Thanksgiving and the New Year. We'll be back in January. So look for the postings for the show and put your reminders. Just make a reminder for each show for yourself to get that in your inbox. Thank you again. We're going to end.
Thank you for listening to Homeopathy and Facial Analysis on Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio with homeopaths Debbie Bruck and Grant Bentley. we encourage you to follow our show. Click the reminder button to receive email notices when shows air. Share with friends on Facebook and MySpace, and also Twitter. We welcome your comments and questions. See you next time.